Today I'm here with James Adams, Jr., and he is the co-author of Healing with Medicinal Plants of the West, and it's Dr. Adams, right?
Right, Dr. Adams, Professor Adams.
And what are you a professor of? Tell me.
Professor of Pharmacology at the USC School of Pharmacy.
Interesting. Okay, so I knew of you originally through reputation. Everybody was raving about this book when it came out. Everybody in the ethnobotanical circles saw this book, Healing with Medicinal Plants of the West. And folks, it's an awesome book. He wrote it with partner Cecilia Garcia, and it has to do with the plants that the Chumash Indians used, and she lended the Chumash perspective. You lended, I presume, the chemical and the botanical aspect to all of the plants. To start off, right off the bat, how can people get the book? Because they're going to hear the interview, they can get their pencils handy. How can they get this book?
Well, you can get it from Amazon.com, or you can get it from my website, which is abedaspress.com.
Spell that, please.
abedusprese.com.
Okay, and if you didn't get all of that down, you can see it on my website as well. And first, what I'd like you to do is tell me how you met Cecilia Garcia. She's described as a medicine woman of the Chumash. How did you two meet originally?
Well, my son was a Cub Scout, and so we went on hikes, and people kept asking me about the plants. So I started to learn the plants, and the more I learned the plants, the more I discovered that they're all medicinal.
Uh-huh.
Well, not all of them, but most of them.
But practically, right?
Yeah.
Practically.
Yeah, and I mean, either they're medicinal or edible, or you can use them for something.
Uh-huh.
And so I started, my family has always used American Indian healing.
Uh-huh.
My family came here in 1635 to Virginia, and my family, since 1635, we have used American Indian healing.
So the Adams family is one of the original families?
No, we're from Virginia, not Massachusetts.
Okay.
But my grandfather taught me about American Indian healing when I was a kid, and so I've always been very receptive to it. So the more I started learning about the plants, the more I thought, you know, I need to find a Chumash person to teach me about the plants.
And had you already been involved with your career with pharmacology? And honestly, I'm not sure what you do at USC. Could you maybe explain that background first? We'll get to Cecilia.
Sure. So I got my PhD in pharmacology in 1981 from UC San Francisco. And I've worked on all kinds of different aspects of pharmacology.
And specifically that means
pharmacology is the study of drugs.
The study of drugs, okay, many of which are plants.
Yeah. Right. Not only the study of drugs, but the study of toxic agents as well.
I see, okay.
And so when a television show needs to figure out how to kill somebody, they call me and ask me. So, you know, whenever you see somebody die from a plant on TV, it's usually me. And I used to be the medical editor for HouseMD, the television show.
Okay. Is that still on TV, if I'm not mistaken?
No, they stopped making new shows, but they're showing reruns all the time.
So just to give an example of what I think I know about pharmacology then, if you want to kill somebody, don't use hemlock because it kills them quickly, but you can find it in the stomach because they die so quickly.
Yeah.
And if you try Amanita Verona mushrooms, you die in about a week, and it's out of your system, right?
Well, it can be, but the problem with eating Amanita, like Amanita phalloides, is that the pattern of organ damage is fairly indicative of what you died from.
I see. Okay, well, anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about.
No, it's not.
So
anyway, I got my PhD in pharmacology from UC San Francisco, and I used to work a lot on how the body gets rid of drugs.
Okay.
Because, you know, you can't have drugs sticking around in your body forever. You have to get rid of them in your urine, your feces, or wherever. And so I studied that for several years. And then I came here to USC. I've been on the faculty now for 25, almost 26 years. And since I came here, I've been working on Parkinson's disease for a while, then stroke for a while. And it was when I was working on stroke that I started looking around for new ways to treat stroke. Because frankly, the way modern medicine treats stroke is, in my opinion, barbaric.
I see.
It really hasn't changed much in several hundred years.
Interesting.
And so my wife is Chinese, so naturally I look to the Chinese for how they do it. And they have a plant that they use in China that's very good for stroke. It's called Dansun.
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 What is the Latin name, or do you know?
Salvia miltiariza.
Oh, it's a salvia. Does it grow here in the United States?
No.
Grows in China.
Grows in China, Korea, and Japan.
Salvia what again?
Miltiariza.
Okay, interesting.
And so I wondered, are there any plants that, here in California, that we could use for stroke? And that, in combination with teaching my son and other Cub Scouts about plants, got me interested in looking for a Chumash healer to teach me. And so I looked for about 3 years. And I talked to several different Chumash people, and none of them really knew much. Just from reading, I knew as much as they did.
Uh-huh.
And so finally, Frank Lamos, who was used to be the director of the Chumash Interpretive Center in Thousand Oaks, told me that I needed to talk to Cecilia Garcia.
Uh-huh.
So I...
How long ago was this?
This was 15 years ago.
Okay, 15 years ago.
Yeah. And so I went to Satwiwa in the Santa Monica Mountains and met Cecilia and asked her if she would teach me.
And by the way, for those of you who are listening from other parts of the country, the Chumash is one of the biggest tribes on the West Coast, and it would be roughly the greater Santa Barbara area.
Well, their range extended from Malibu up to San Luis Obispo and was centered in the Santa Barbara Ventura area.
Uh-huh. Okay.
In fact, Malibu is a Chumash word which means thundering water.
Okay, interesting. And so you just go up there and then ask around for Cecilia? How did that work?
So I went to Satwiwa, and Cecilia was there to lead a hike that day.
Okay.
And I brought my wife with me, and Cecilia was apprehensive about working with me because she's had some unpleasant experiences in the past with scientists.
Uh-huh.
And fortunately, I brought my wife with me, and my wife is Chinese, so she could see right away that I'm not a racist.
Okay.
She really wanted to judge my interaction with my wife to make sure that I'm a good person. And so after talking to my wife, not me, she talked to my wife for about 2 hours.
I see.
And then she said, okay, she would be willing to work with me.
Okay, that's interesting. Describe Cecilia for the listener, because I met her only once, and just for those who don't know, she passed away maybe a year ago. And she was a remarkable person, but I want to hear it from you.
Well, you know, she was tall. She was about 6 feet tall almost, and she was
tall for most native people.
Tall for most women.
Right.
And she liked to have long hair that she wore in braids a lot. And she was very independent. And
hey, there's Killer.
Okay, so Cecilia liked to wear her hair in braids a lot and, was very independent. Did what she wanted.
She always seemed very intense. That's one way I would describe her.
Mm-hmm. She could be very intense, and some people liked her a lot, some people didn't care for her much.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's the way most people are.
And do you know how Cecilia came about her learning?
Yes, she learned from her grandparents, mostly from her grandfather, Ignacio Alvarez, and from her grandmother, who is also named Cecilia Garcia. And since she passed away, I've actually communicated with her sister, Cynthia, as I recall, Cynthia Garcia.
Uh-huh.
But Ignacio Alvarez was also a teacher of Carlos Castaneda.
Oh, interesting. Well, a student or a teacher?
No, he taught Carlos Castaneda.
At UCLA.
Carlos Castaneda sought him out and learned from Ignacio Alvarez.
I see, interesting.
And then never gave him much credit for anything.
Well, he never gave anybody credit, did he? He had no background.
Anyway, but So Ignacio Alvarez was apparently a very intense and very gifted healer.
And this was up in Chumash territory?
No, this was here in East L.A.
Okay, in East L.A.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, Ignacio Alvarez lived in East L.A. He actually came into this country. So Cecilia's family escaped the U.S. Army in 1850 and went to Mexico. And they didn't come back from Mexico until World War One.
Oh, I see.
When Ignacio Alvarez could come back and be a U.S. soldier and then gain his U.S. citizenship.
Oh, I see.
So he came back then.
Is Ignacio still alive?
No. He died in the 70s, as I recall.
Uh-huh, interesting. And so so Cecilia studied with him, I presume, then through her
whole
life.
Her
whole life, yeah.
Yeah, because her grandmother, Cecilia, had decided that she was the one who the knowledge would be passed to. And, you know, in American Indians, it goes from grandparent to grandchild. Healing goes from grandparent to grandchild.
Skips a generation.
It skips a generation.
Yeah. Not so much as a matter of a rule, but just as the way it works out.
I think it is kind of a rule.
It is kind of a rule.
Yeah,
okay.
It is kind of a rule.
All right.
And so they had chosen Cecilia to be the one to receive the knowledge.
I see.
And at first, apparently, she wasn't very receptive, but then later she became more and more receptive.
How old was Cecilia when she began her studies?
She was just a little girl.
I see. Interesting. Yeah. So it really was lifelong. How old was Cecilia when she died?
She was about 57, as I recall.
I see.
Died.
Okay, she was just about my age, basically. So so that's fascinating. So then you met her that day, and then what transpired? Here's the PhD meeting the Chumash, and then what?
So she asked me to sing for her.
She asked you to sing for her.
That was
okay.
The first thing she wanted me to do was sing.
After you were approved by talking to your wife.
Right.
Okay.
She wanted me to sing for her. And so fortunately, I actually knew a Ponca Indian song because I've drummed on a Ponca drum several times. So I sang that for her. And she said, you know, that's really a boring song, but you sing well. So, you know, that was important. And she started teaching me Chumash songs after that. You know, in future days, we'd go to her house in Long Beach, and she'd always have a big gathering of people at her house and her big fire pit, and we'd sing Chumash songs for hours.
Really, I do remember when she was at a nature center with her, you and her with the book, and there were pictures of a place in Long Beach where she did sweat lodges and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So, did both of you collaborate on the book specifically, or
yes.
Okay, you did.
We did several interviews where I recorded her and then transcribed the recordings, and so for instance, the introduction of the book is actually written by Cecilia, and the way it was written was that we did interviews.
The healing way on
healing
page
way.
13.
Yeah. And so we did interviews, and I transcribed the interviews and then wrote it. And
well, it's a very interesting approach, because I noticed there is the scientific approach, the breakdown, you know, the identification, the characteristics, distribution, uses, and all of that. And then there's like I don't know what it's titled, but like the spiritual commentary, mm-hmm. where Cecilia would talk about some tradition or some use of the plant.
Mm-hmm.
So when you first got together, you knew you wanted to do a book with Cecilia.
Right.
Okay.
Right. I had actually already started working on the book, and so she wanted to see that, and once she saw that, she said, yeah, let's write a book together, because she was so unhappy with the fact that all of the writing about Chumash healing was either only partially right or was mostly wrong. And especially the writing that was based on the work of John Harrington.
Harrington, sure. Uh-huh.
Yeah. His problem was that he was an atheist, and the Chumash people really did not respect him for that.
I see. So did Harrington do his work basically like all of the old anthropologists? They just go out and try to interview and find out what they can find out and assume it's all correct?
Yeah, and he was a very good linguist, so he actually became fluent in the Chumash language, and they respected him for that. But he was a bizarre person, you know. He thought he owned Chumash anthropology.
Oh.
And so whenever other anthropologists would show up to try to do anything in Chumash territory, he'd do everything he could to frighten them away. And the most famous story was that there was a group of men and women who were interested in anthropology who showed up one day. And so he took off all of his clothes and began his lecture nude to them. And needless to say that they left almost immediately.
Okay, right. So this is not expressly Chumash healing that the book is about. It's healing plants of the West. But but would you say that all of the healing traditions are, that's from Cecilia's point of view, so therefore really it is a Chumash healing book?
You know, the plants that are from Chumash territory really have her identification on them.
Uh-huh.
Her you know, writing is there. The plants that aren't from Chumash territory have the other Indian identification, like the Kahuilla and the Tahoe people and uh-huh. so on.
Kahuilla was, that's way out in Morongo or down by Palm Springs?
Palm Springs,
yeah.
And so Cecilia then, of course, proofread everything and made changes here and there to make sure that everything was right, because Cecilia actually had an extensive education in California Indian healing. She went as far north as Mount Shasta and learned from healers up there when she was younger.
Well, you know, there is a book called, I believe it's Ethnobotany of Native Americans, something like that. It's a thick...
A Mormon book?
No, it's a thick book. It's, really thick. Is that a Mormon book?
Yeah, by Michael Mormon.
That's right.
Mormon.
I thought you meant by the Mormon Church or something.
His name is Mormon.
You're right.
M-O-E-R-M-A-N.
And, you know, a lot of the uses are pretty much the same. People figured out the uses. So whether you're in the East or in the West, people figured out the chemistry of the plants and what it did for your body. So most everything in the book, although it's Chumash, pretty much all of them did things, as far as I can tell, the same way with slight variations.
Well, most plants, you know, the active compounds, all you have to do is try them, and you figure out right away what they're good for. So Lobelia cardinalis makes you vomit as soon as you drink it. So
does that have a common name, Lobelia cardinalis? It's just called Lobelia, isn't it?
Cardinal Lobelia, red Lobelia,
okay.
Something like that.
Okay. So if you have to get rid of something, you take Lobelia,
well,
obviously.
Well, you have to be very careful, though, because vomiting can actually kill you. And so I explain that in the book over and over again, that, you know, vomiting is just not recommended.
So before you met Cecilia, you were putting together an outline of the healing with medicinal plants of the West. How did you select what you wanted to include? Pretty much everything that was commonly used for medicine?
Well, I actually tried to base the plants on what other anthropologists had written, and because, you know, part of pharmacology is medical anthropology.
Okay.
But she corrected me right away and said, you know, most of these plants we don't use, they're not important. Some anthropologists may think they are.
So there were plants that you were going to include that Cecilia said don't.
Yeah, and other plants that I wasn't going to include, and she said, we have to have this one.
What's an example of that?
One example was the evening primrose that in my opinion, it was, you know, people have written so much about it from the European point of view, and she said, oh no, we have to put that in because from the California Indian point of view, there are some differences and some important differences.
I see. I know the primrose plant is very common around here.
Mm-hmm.
I mostly specialize in the food uses of plants, and I know that there's some marginal food uses for that plant. What are the medicinal properties? Do you recall?
It's good for women's problems.
I see.
PMS, dysmenorrhea, things like that.
You make an infusion from the leaves?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. But mugwort is better. But anyway, you can use them both.
Oh, I remember now when Cecilia gave her talk and workshop, when you were talking about the book 2 or so years ago, she was big on mugwort.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody kept saying mugwort and yerba santa. Those are the big ones for Cecilia.
Yeah, mugwort was her favorite plant, and so I actually grow it here in my garden so that I have it all the time.
Now, for those who don't know mugwort, could you describe that plant?
Yeah, Artemisia douglasiana. It's one of the five plants that our ancestors took with them all over the world because they knew we would need it. And so in Europe, it's called Artemisia vulgaris. In China, it's called Artemisia argii. In California, it's called Artemisia douglasiana.
Those are different Latin names, but it's the same plant?
Same plant.
I see.
You know, there's some slight differences. In China, it's a little hairier. In Europe, it has maybe a few more lobes on it, but it's basically the same plant. And so our ancestors took it all over the world 50,000 years ago when they started their migrations. And it's useful for PMS, for dysmenorrhea, which is pain during menstruation, menopausal hot flashes. It's also good for dreaming, especially people who either can't dream or who have unpleasant dreams. And it's good for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. It's also good for addictions.
Oh, and all of these are taken as an infusion?
No, you have to know exactly how to use them, and it's all explained very
carefully. It's all explained in the book. Yeah, Cecilia often did say there's different ways you have to do it. You don't just do it all the same.
No.
I've heard that the moxa that the acupuncturists use is, in fact, mugwort.
Right. That's
so they burn it on you, or they do it. They don't drink it, but they burn it on a needle, or they burn it on your skin somewhere.
Well, the preferred method is you make a cigar of the leaves, and then you smudge that cigar, and as it burns, you hold it close to the skin to heat the skin.
I see.
And the doctor has to be skilled enough to know how to heat the skin without burning the skin.
I see. Okay. And then in Mexico, in the curandero shops, I've seen estafiate.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that
mugwort?
It's mugwort.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought mugwort also, and that's
used,
I know, for stomach aches and cramps and things like that. It's interesting. It turned out to be such a valuable plant. My first exposure to mugwort was simply that local Indians would use the dried leaves, and you can roll it up because of the fiber, and it makes a cigar, and you could light it, and you could transport your coals when you're on the trail.
It's one of the best tinders for making fires. So Jim Robertson teaches you how to get the fibers out and use it for tinder.
Oh, so you know Jim Robertson.
Great guy.
Jim's a friend of ours. He's a teacher in the Santa Monica Mountains, and he works with children and adults, and he comes to my classes sometimes, and he has a detailed explanation of how the philosophy behind making fire and the way to do it the old-fashioned way. It's actually pretty impressive. You can find it on YouTube, Jim Robertson. I'm not sure really how to look it up. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in just a minute. Okay, we're back with James Adams talking about healing with medicinal plants of the West. And James, you mentioned that there were five special herbs among the Chumash, and mugwort was one. We were just discussing mugwort and how it's used all over the world. What are the other four herbs that are particularly special to the Chumash?
Elderberries, which is Sambucus nigra.
And that's found all over the country, isn't it?
All over the world.
Yeah.
Stinging nettles, Urtica dioica.
Now, was nettles a native to this area? I think nettles was introduced, wasn't it?
No. Nettles was transported all over the world 50,000 years ago.
Okay, so we have native nettles, okay.
Uh-huh. And there's a native European nettles, which is shorter also, that was introduced here.
Okay.
And we also have... Oh, dear.
Nettle, elderberry, mugwort. There's two more. Yerba santa, maybe?
No.
Not yerba santa?
No. Oh, chamomile and yarrow.
Chamomile and yarrow,
and yarrow. And, of course, yarrow is to stop bleeding, and chamomile is for soothing. It makes a wonderful tea.
Now, chamomile is native? I know there's a native yarrow, and there's an introduced yarrow. Same with chamomile?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
They were introduced 50,000 years ago by our ancestors.
That's recent enough to be considered native.
All right.
50,000 years ago. And you mentioned that in the book, which is really a listing of each plant and their uses, that there is an important section about balance. Could you explain what that is?
You know, when I was a kid, my grandfather... told me, you need to learn how to live in balance. And I remember looking up at my grandfather and saying, you know, I'm only 7 years old. I don't know what balance is. So he taught me. You love God, you love your family, you respect all people, you work for your community, you work for your environment, you take only what you need, you keep yourself thin and strong.
Your father taught you all that?
Grandfather.
Your grandfather.
My grandfather, when I was 7 years old. And my grandfather had an interesting way of teaching. He would teach me once, and then if I ever asked him again, he would say, well, tell me what you remember. And so I had to remember,
right,
you know.
Right.
That's a good way to teach. He wouldn't repeat things.
Sometimes people think I'm playing with them when they ask me a question during a class, and I'm not playing with them, but if you work your mind to remember, you'd be surprised what you do remember and how you can put it to practice. Tell me that list again. I liked that.
And there you go.
I should be remembering, right?
Yeah. Love God, love your family, respect all people, work for your community, work for your environment, take only what you need, keep yourself thin and strong.
Now, was this your grandfather's list that he came up with on his own?
No, he'd been taught by American Indians.
Because I was going to say, there is sometimes when we speak of the old ways in a specific way, there are tenets and aspects of what that means, and that's pretty much what that sounds like.
Yeah.
There are a few other things that you could list as well, but that sounds like what we call the old ways traditions, the good old ways traditions that were practiced by all the Native American communities. And in your book, you mentioned what's wrong with modern medicine. What would you say in a nutshell? What's wrong with modern medicine?
In a nutshell?
Well, maybe not. It doesn't have to be a nutshell. It doesn't have to be a nutshell. Okay.
Well, the number one problem is obesity in the world. When I was a kid, obesity was not okay.
Okay, so that's what's wrong with the individual, right? Not necessarily the system.
It's wrong with the system because now we allow obesity in our system. It's normal.
I see.
And so now we have all of these diseases that are caused by obesity that our society has to cope with. And the diseases are heart disease, diabetes type 2, arthritis, and obesity doesn't cause cancer, but it promotes cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're paying 18% of our gross national product on health care, which we cannot afford. So China is footing the bill for us. And who knows how long China is going to be interested in paying our bills for us.
How is China doing that?
By helping float our international debt.
I gotcha. So when we say obesity, is it because why do you think that is in our country? Why are people eating so much and not exercising? And I know there's probably a lot of things, but
well, number one, it's okay. It's politically okay to be obese, and kids don't have to exercise in PE class anymore if mom writes them a letter. And so the political decision to make it okay is killing us.
I see.
And not only that, people are learning how to be obese, and the way you do it is by learning how to eat high-fat foods, because fat is addictive, just like morphine and alcohol are addictive.
And when you say learning how to eat high-fat foods, what do you mean?
You know, none of us start out eating high-fat foods when we're kids because it makes you sick.
Mm-hmm.
You have to learn how to do it. You have to be taught how to eat high-fat foods.
Are you talking about, like, the marketing from the fast food chains or what? Something
like
that. Okay.
You know, sometimes your parents teach you also, but it's a lot of it is the marketing of fast foods in this country.
I mean, there's probably great sums of money to be made by catering to all of our vices, not the least of which is food and junk food, and there's money to be made in the low quality sugars and all that.
Yeah.
When I was growing up and I was in high school, I remember there was the alternative high school in Pasadena, and they all got together. I was just a guest because I didn't go to that school, and they got to vote on their own terms, and they wanted to vote to do away with PE. And I think these were, some of them might remember me, but I think they were just lazy. There was one guy that raised up his hand, and he said, "What's wrong with PE? Isn't that good for you?" And I'm thinking, right. Why are you guys voting it out? But they were just basically lazy. And I think the more you exercise, the more you feel good about yourself.
Well, not only that, exercising is your time with God. Uh-huh. And so exercise is really a required thing every day to help keep your body in balance. Uh-huh. Because your body, you have two major nervous systems in the body, the sympathetic that raises your heart rate and blood pressure, and the parasympathetic that lowers your heart rate and blood pressure. And when you exercise, automatically those two nervous systems go into balance. Mm-hmm. So exercise is critical to normal health.
And then probably just eating sound food, which goes right along with the medicinal plants. I remember Cecilia at one of the talks, I listened just to portions of it. She did talk about the need for good nutrition. Mm-hmm. And I think that it would be safe to say that when the more junk food people eat, the more comfortable they get with that. Mm-hmm. And it is like a bad cycle, because your body wants it, and you're not really getting what you need by eating sound nutrition. Mm-hmm. I know some of the folks that I run with, they advocate hunter-gatherer kind of a diet. By that they mean meat and vegetables, but not processed foods. To eliminate as many processed foods as possible.
Well, I'm a vegetarian. I've been vegetarian for 36 years, and I think we need to remember that our grandparents, those of us who come from a farming tradition, our grandparents and great-grandparents, they were all vegetarians, because the only time they got meat was when someone went hunting or when one of the neighbors slaughtered a cow, but most of the time they were vegetarian.
Most of the time, so in other words, by circumstance, not necessarily by choice.
Yeah.
Well, now, my mother was on a farming community. They lived on a farm, and I think they had a lot of eggs. They raised chickens,
so
they got their protein that way.
Milk and eggs.
But vegetarians don't eat eggs, do they?
I do. Yeah. I eat milk and eggs. I'm a lacto-ovo vegetarian.
Okay, yeah. See, I consider myself quasi-vegetarian, and I always ate eggs. I mean, sometimes I'll have meat today. Mm-hmm. I'm married to a Chinese person, too, so...
What
so
can you do?
A lot of meat in the Chinese culture.
I talked my wife into being vegetarian, and it works pretty well.
Well, there is tofu and things like that for your protein.
Yeah.
So... do you go on speaking tours or anything of that sort, promoting your book?
I do, and I travel all over from Davis to Ensenada. I give talks, and we're in the third edition of the book now, so the book is very successful. I've sold over 6,000 copies so far.
That's interesting. I know that before I came, I was asking, we were talking about the different recipes. So this is the third edition, mm-hmm. and you've added recipes
right.
of how to use it, or not just use it for such and such, how specifically to go about it.
Right.
What are some of the other additives, changes in this book from the previous editions? Are all the photos the same?
No, I've put in new photos because I got a better camera,
okay.
and I'm becoming a better photographer. The other thing is the front section. I talk about what's wrong with modern medicine.
There's more commentary up front.
That's new.
Yeah.
And I put in more spirituality this time because, I wasn't putting in as much spirituality in the previous two editions, and Cecilia was very unhappy about that. So
she blamed you?
Well, I was trying to make it appeal to a wider market, and she kept saying, the important thing is to do this right. And to do it right requires spirituality. So
uh-huh.
it's all in there now.
Well, I thought it was a good touch. I have been criticized because I don't emphasize the medicinal side too often in my classes. But it's because, to some degree, I want to hear your take on this, but to some degree, when you treat a symptom with an herb, or when you treat a symptom with an herb or a drug, there's no difference in the sense that you're treating the symptom.
Mm-hmm.
But I have been argued back on that, well, of course, there's a difference because one is more potentially harmful
mm-hmm.
than the herb.
Yeah.
And I heard a doctor on the radio, one of the local radio stations, and I was a little bit astounded. It was an NPR show, I believe, and essentially saying that that none of those herbs are good at all. And he went down a whole list, and I'm thinking, where's this guy been?
I know.
No, he went down the whole list, and he said, this is why we have powerful drugs. This is why you come to us. And this guy was adamant. He was joking at all.
Oh, I know.
That, garlic is no good, and ginkgo biloba is no good, and on and on and on, all the things that I take that I get good results with.
Well, first of all, all foods are functional. So functional, that means they're good for nutrition. They're also good as drugs. So garlic is the best example. It's a food that's a functional food because it gives you good nutrition. It also helps lower your cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
Apples, same thing. Gives you good nutrition, also helps lower your cholesterol. And so functional foods, you know, people forget that all foods really are functional.
Versus just a pill that to address
right.
a symptom. Yeah.
And if people would eat a better diet, they wouldn't need so many drugs. If people would keep themselves in balance, their bodies would heal themselves and they wouldn't need drugs. They wouldn't get sick.
Right.
And the other thing that I say to doctors like you're discussing is that human beings have been on this planet for 200,000 years. During that time, we've always used plants as drugs. That means there's been this enormous natural selection process where people who responded to plants survived and passed on their genes. That means we have to continue using plants today.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's interesting, yeah. So there was a Greek philosopher or a Greek teacher, I'm not sure if it was Hippocrates or not, and he was the one that said your food should be your medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Hippocrates?
I don't remember who,
but you've heard that line too.
Certainly food is medicine. There's just no denying it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, people who are eating all this high-fat food, you know, the fast foods and the hamburger that's 65% fat and so on, they're killing themselves because they're substituting the good nutrition that they get from plants and fruits with fat, which gives you only disease, puts you out of balance.
Mm-hmm. So, folks, I want to strongly recommend that you get a copy of this and read it. Were there any plants in here that have unique stories in your research or the telling of or they all have unique stories, huh?
Well, yeah. You know, the one that is completely unique is chia,
which
is Salvia columbaris.
I see ants in here too. That's pretty unique.
Yeah, there are ants in here too.
But I just had chia for breakfast this morning.
Good
I get
for
a,
you.
It's the Mexican chia, not the desert
right.
you know, one that we read about. But what can you tell me about the chia?
So chia, Salvia columbaris, right. is the best plant for stroke.
It's really?
It's also good for heart attack. This is, in China they use Salvia miltiorhiza. In California we use Salvia columbaris.
Okay, so the average person can go to any health food store today, and you may not get Salvia columbaris,
you'll get Salvia hispanica.
Right, which
but
is
still
pretty close,
it's
yeah.
still chia.
And what would one do, would it be as a preventative measure before a stroke or what?
It's after stroke. So preventative, you keep yourself in balance to prevent stroke
in
or
the first
to hold
place.
It off as
okay.
long as you can.
Right.
But then after you've had a stroke, what you do is you take 1 tablespoon of chia seeds, you mix it with 10 tablespoons of water, and you stir it for about 15 minutes until it forms a gel.
Like tapioca pudding, practically.
Yeah, about like that.
Yeah.
Then the person who's had a stroke drinks that. And you do that 3 times a day for the first 2 months. And then you can taper off to twice a day, but you keep that up for 6 months. And in the same time, you're doing exercises every day, very mild exercises like Tai Chi or, you know, aqua aerobics or, you know, some sort of walking, some sort of mild exercise to help stimulate your body to keep yourself in balance.
So truly none of this is just do this one thing and that's the panacea. It's
no.
always exercise, food, diet, thinking, the
keep
whole
thing.
Keep
yourself in balance, pray,
yeah.
all
yeah.
of that.
Yeah.
It's all critical.
I was remembering when Cecilia gave the presentation that I went to, she made these little bags.
Mm-hmm. Sagebrush.
Was it sagebrush?
Mm-hmm.
Because people would come to her. I had a booth selling my books, and I was kind of listening out of one ear because she had a big table of herbs. They would come to her, they would line up, they would talk to her, and she would actually, I thought she added a few things to the bag, depending
be.
On the person.
Yeah, depending on the person.
And she said to do this or do
yeah.
that. What did you do with what did one do with that bag? It was like a little baseball size bundle of herbs that she packed on the spot.
So what she would have them do is she had a big gourd full of dried plants.
That's right.
And they would reach into that gourd and they would take the amount of plants that they felt was right for them and they would put it in a little bag. And that would be their medicine bag then. And they would sleep with that, they would keep it with them, and that bag would respond to their needs so that it would help them with keep themselves in balance.
I see. So it wasn't about making a tea or anything. It was just
no.
keeping that with you.
That's right.
More or less in one of the old traditional methods.
Right.
I
so,
see.
So just the fragrance from that bag would help you sleep at night, would help you dream, would help you be calm and rational. And she also recommended that everybody needed to start drinking white sage in their water every day to keep calm and rational and productive in society.
Drink white sage every day.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Just put a leaf in your water bottle
uh-huh.
and drink that every day.
And of course, the white sage is in the same genus as the chia seed.
Right. Salvia apiana.
Uh-huh.
The chia is an annual sage. Salvia apiana is a perennial sage.
Okay, right. Uh-huh.
And it only occurs here in Southern California. So we are the caretakers of white sage for everyone else in the world who needs it.
I hadn't thought to bring this up, but it's gotten very hip at farmers markets and bookstores and places to sell these big white sage bundles. And some of the Gabrielino people I know are very much against it. They say it wastes the plant,
mm-hmm.
and nobody ever used sage in quite that way. You know, it's sort of like a new age thing now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about these bundles that we see everywhere now?
I think the bundles are great because they protect the plant and you can transport it easily. But what you need to do when you use it is you need to unwrap it and take out one leaf at a time. Just use one leaf at a time because each leaf is precious and it's only one leaf that you need at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess what bugs me is I do see people going into the wild picking more and more of it, and I wish they wouldn't. They should grow it themselves
mm-hmm.
rather than cutting it way back in the wilderness areas.
Yeah, I have a big bush here in my garden.
Yeah, we try to grow it in the front yard too. So did you and Cecilia ever go on give talks together?
Oh, we gave over 80 talks together.
Okay, really?
Talks and hikes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What kind of reaction did you get from the participants?
It was, for the most part, it was very enthusiastic. Every now and then there would be one or two people who were kind of holding back and, you know, kind of skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
It just depends on how open-minded you are and how willing you are to listen.
I think I read about you giving, both of you giving a talk up in Duke Magian Park,
mm-hmm.
which is in northern Glendale.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do on the walk? Would you actually try things or simply,
yeah,
you would try things
yeah.
too? Okay.
So we would, typically we would talk about every plant we came upon.
Just describe everyone as you came
everyone.
To it.
Everyone.
Yeah.
And
pretty much everything was useful, right?
Yeah.
And
so sometimes we'd, These hikes were 2-hour hikes, and sometimes we'd only get, you know, half a mile up and 2 hours was already over because we were talking about every single plant we came to.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, usually we tried to concentrate on 6 major plants, and those plants are yerba santa, white sage, mugwort, sagebrush, black sage, and bay, California bay.
Those
are the 6
those
that
are good
really
plants.
The foundation of Chumash healing that everyone needs to learn how to use for their everyday health.
They're all very common. What would they use the bay for, the bay leaves or the nuts?
Well, you can eat the nuts, but you have to know how to do it. It requires roasting. And
Do you know Paul Campbell?
I've met him.
Yeah, he wrote Survival Skills of Native California.
Yeah.
He roasts the nuts so they're almost burnt, and
right.
they taste kind of like chocolate.
Right. They
yeah.
have kind of a buttery flavor to them, but
yeah.
you really have to roast them until they're dark brown.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they have a really overpowering bay flavor.
And the leaves, how are they used in Chumash medicine?
The leaves are used for pain, really violent toothache pain. They can be used, but mostly they're used for migraine headaches.
And you make a tea and you drink it?
No, you just put you crack the top of the leaf off and you put it in your mouth and you just leave it in your mouth.
Oh, interesting.
Until the headache is gone.
Interesting.
You can also make a bath of it and soak in the bath for arthritis pain.
I see. I noticed that you have the wild buckwheat, which is very common in the book. What is the wild buckwheat used for?
Food.
Oh, it's used for the food. Okay.
Wonderful food.
There's one that I see called laurel sumac.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's traveled to the chaparral would encounter it. Did that have a use in the Chumash pharmacopoeia?
Chumash people didn't use it, but the Kumeyaay used it to induce vomiting.
Really? Kumeyaay were where?
San Diego.
San Diego County, okay. to induce vomiting. That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, we just have a couple of minutes left. Why don't you tell us again how people can get your book, and what is the cost of the book? Do they send $18 in the mail, or what do they do?
Yeah, they can go onto my website and click on the PayPal button, and you have to pay tax in the state of California.
And postage.
Yeah. It's $4. It really does cost me $4 to ship the book.
Okay.
And, you know, if you buy it through Amazon.com, it's the same price.
Okay. And it's ABEDUS Press, and is there a, did you say there's a website too?
Yeah, abedespress.com.
So ABEDUSPRESS.com. Mm-hmm. And if folks want to get in touch with James Adams, you've seen my website there, and you have my email. You could contact me that way. Do you want people to contact you through email if they want to?
They can. jadams@usc.edu. And my website has, and my Facebook page have all my hikes and talks. I'm giving a hike on July 27th here in Rosemont Preserve here in La Crescenta. Then
July 27th. It'll be past that by the time people are hearing this.
Oh, wow.
Okay, it's probably August now, folks.
And I'll be giving a talk in Palm Desert in November, and another one in the Santa Monica Mountains in December.
Okay, so check his website, and if you can't find it, drop me an email. Thank you very much, Jim. I had an enlightening hour with you.
Good talking to you, Christopher.
All right.